This is Danielle Robay from Bookmarked by Reese's Book Club. A new car is kind of like a new book. It takes you places you never thought you could go. What will you drive into the next chapter of your life? It's fun to dream about your next car, but when you're done dreaming, you need to head to Cars.com. Cars.com has the tools and expert advice to help you find your dream car. Their advanced search filters allow you to explore 2 million new and used cars so that you can find the perfect car. Start your search with Cars.com. Where to next?
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Hey, everybody. Hello and welcome to the Bulwark Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Miller. We are doing it live today. We're doing it live. We had an all-hands meeting. Thankfully, it went better than the Iranian all-hands meeting a couple months ago. We're all live and well, but I could not take the pod in the morning. And since we're doing it live, I wanted to bring in our resident guest whose temperament most matches Bill O'Reilly. And that is Atlantic writer, Radio Free Tom Nichols. How you
that
doing,
one, that stings, but hell, we'll do it live. Doing so it live. Anyway,
thank you for those of you with us live on YouTube and Substack. Everybody else will be in your ears a little late today, and then we're back to our normal schedule tomorrow. We've got a great lineup the rest of the week. Tom, we got a bunch to discuss. We'll do a little music at the end, as is our want. But I kind of wanted to frame up the whole conversation just by taking a look at the bleats that Donald Trump sent on Monday night between 10:15 p.m. and almost 2 a.m. Luckily, friend of the show, Harry Sisson, kind of summarized each bleat. There were 45 of them from our totally insane and sleep-deprived president. And we're just going to go through a few. 10:15 accuses Barack Obama of attempting a coup. 10:15 says Obama worked with the CIA to overthrow Trump. 10:15 reposts a tweet saying Obama is a traitor and he should be arrested. 10:22 attacks Dominion voting systems. There's been some lawsuits about that. 10:23 back at Obama, accuses him of personally making $120 million from Obamacare. I don't know how that happened. 10:27 demands Senator Mark Kelly resign. 10:30 demands Jack Smith be arrested. It's kind of lucky for Mark Kelly, just resign for him, or jail for Jack Smith. 10:30, Obama, Clinton, and yesterday's guest, Jim Comey, are guilty of treason. 10:39, reposts a tweet from a MAGA account saying they have secret intel proving Clinton and Obama committed crimes. 10:39, reposts a MAGA tweet saying Hillary Clinton should be sent to Haiti. I'm going to fast forward because there's so many. 10:41 accuses Obama and John Brennan and Clinton of sedition and treason again. Then he starts posting some like boomer posts. 10:42 is a picture of a man on CCTV footage knocking over food a waiter was carrying. 10:47, Obama is the most demonic force in American politics. 10:49 brings up Dominion again. 10:51 reposts a fake Charlie Kirk account that claimed Obama blocked Hillary Clinton from being prosecuted. 11:28 claims a senior Democrat just testified under oath that Senator Adam Schiff leaked classified information, not true. 1:13 a.m. attacks the New York Times for their report on his reflecting pool remodel. So we're in the middle of a war with Iran, major economic uncertainty, 3 hours of deranged posting from the president of the United States. You post a lot, but boy.
Yeah, I post a lot, but I'm not actually holding the codes to the nuclear arsenal. And I don't have early morning briefings from the CIA on the condition of the world. And I'm not required to make any major decisions about, the fate of billions of human beings. So you'll have to forgive me if I do a little late night posting. But if that were my dad, I were watching, you know, my dad or my grandfather posting like this, I'd be out there the next day. Dad, are you okay? You sleeping enough? You know, because then the next day, of course, when there is the actual business of government taking place, you know, he's doing touch and goes, you know, or the military guys used to call them snap rolls, you know. You know, he's just not there. I mean, there's something, look, there's something wrong with the president. I think he's having health issues, which is not unusual for a man who's almost 80.
The neck bruise is kind of, the hand bruises have moved.
I mean, he's walking around with makeup on his hands.
I'm pretty sure it's not a hickey.
Or we don't know that. Let's be responsible and say he's walking around with what looks like makeup slathered on his hands. There's something wrong here. And I think, you know, it's a fair question to ask. American citizens have a reasonable concern about the mental stability of their commander in chief. But we're not getting those answers because everything in this White House, you know, when you were reading through those tweets, Tim, it's a reminder that no matter how powerful he gets, no matter, you know, he's president, he's got a second term, he's got complete control of the Republican Party, everything that he's ever wanted. And yet he just radiates this paranoid insecurity that he can't stop thinking about Barack Obama, can't stop thinking about, you know, John Brennan and Joe Biden. I mean, it's incredible, you know, how unbelievably insecure and freaked out this guy is all the time. And, you know, probably being awake till 2 a.m. when you're, you know, 79 years old and you're in a demanding job probably isn't helping any of that.
Yeah. And again, we're not doctors sort of be responsible, but I mean, he is demonstrating paranoid delusions and he appears to have insomnia, at least at night. He's dozing off a little during the day. It's not really a great like pairing of traits. Just even putting my Trump derangement syndrome aside, like, you know, in the middle of a hot war, kind of whatever we're calling it, a decrease fire, you wouldn't really want somebody posting paranoid delusions all night long, I wouldn't think.
Well, you know, and the thing is, of course, his supporters always say, well, he knows what he's doing. He's just goofing around and, you know, he's having fun. He puts up tweets about making Venezuela the 51st state, you know, and he knows it's just a joke. And then, of course, someone says, so what was that about? And he goes, no, I mean it. You know, it would be funny if it weren't so terrifying. One of the most amusing things about the entire Trump era, Trump says something crazy. His supporters get way out on a limb to say he didn't mean that. That's not what he said. It's a joke. And then the next sound you hear is Trump behind them while they're on that limb going, you know, sawing it off, saying, no, I really meant it. No, I really want to do this. No, I'm not kidding. No, I really believe this. And then boom, you know, they all fall off that limb. I'm not a psychiatrist. I don't know if these are paranoid delusions. But I keep referring back to the book.
He's paranoid and he has delusions, I guess. Clinically paranoid delusions, I don't know. But like, yeah, just using
I'm the definition. I'm not a clinician. he seems to think that everybody's out to get him, and he believes things that are not true. Let's put it that way. I keep referring back to this book, Night of Camp David, that was written in 1965 about by the guys who wrote 7 Days in May. About a president who, you know, goes, like they said in Dr. Strangelove, goes a little funny in the head, you know, and wants to take over, you know, all of Europe and form a confederation with the Russians. I mean, it's just this crazy stuff. And the stuff Trump is putting on social media is nuttier, is crazier than the stuff that was in a book that 50 years ago, 60 years ago, was considered a political thriller that was too outlandish to be made into a movie. So that's where we are. I keep saying this is the guy in the book is President Mark Hollenbeck. And I keep saying, okay, I used to say this is Mark Hollenbeck behavior. This is beyond what's in a book that was written as fiction. And I don't know what's happened to this country that people just kind of shrug and go, what are you going to do? You know? That's why he is.
Impeachment now. I wanted to start there because now we go through some pretty serious matters. And I think that Thinking about his mental state is an important way to contextualize it. Jonathan Swan, our guy over at the New York Times, had this story yesterday. Classified military intelligence assessments from early this month show Iran has regained access to most of its missile sites, launchers, and underground facilities, including the U.S. Intel assesses that Iran has restored operational access to 30 of the 33 missile sites it maintains along the Strait of Hormuz, and 90% of Iran's underground missile sites are partially or fully operational. Relevant for a number of reasons. Like number one, that's another thing that he's either lying to us about or deluded about when he talks about the state of the Iran military. Number two, if that is the intelligence he's getting, that's an extremely relevant fact for thinking about what comes next. Because if they maintain most of their missile sites along the Strait of Hormuz, like the idea of going in to open it militarily, and you tell me, you were the Naval War College professor, but seems extremely risky.
Yeah, there are a couple of things occurred to me when I saw that. First, it's interesting that the reaction from the administration is basically, who told you that? Right. Which is not, you know, denial. You know, that's a lot of leaking going on, apparently. But I'm guessing this, you know, that this is coming out of the defense and the intelligence communities, because they would be the people who would know. And that's really alarming. So the other thing that I immediately thought of is, well, we've been bombing the piss out of them for 2 months, according to, you know, everything we're being told. What are we hitting? What have we been doing for 2 months if you still have 90%? And, you know, I mean, we've been told over and over again, you know, they've decimated, that they don't have anything left, that it's all over, that they're scrambling, that they're wandering around in the wreckage, you know, rending their garments in the smoking ruins. Well, apparently not. And that, you know, that's really a serious problem. I mean, this is, you know, even during Vietnam with body counts and, you know, Matt, we weren't getting, there wasn't such a huge delta between what seems to be happening and what we're being told is happening. As for what happens next, I think, you know, Trump keeps saying, well, what? And this time we're really going to, you know, what have we been doing for 8 weeks, going on 9 weeks? I think what happens next is he gets tired of this, and he just, you know, apparently some of these reports say he's already asking, how do I just declare victory and walk away from this? Now, you can declare victory. I think if the war ends right now, which it probably has to, unless we really want to go big and invade Iran and do something, you know, Vietnam level, then it's a strategic loss for the United States. We are without question worse off than if we had not gone to war at all. Yeah. That's the thing that we really are going to have to grapple with here.
It's hard to imagine how we'd even get back to even.
I don't know. I mean, it's you know, the Iranians have now, you know, the Trump administration keeps saying, well, for 47 years, you know, we've been at war. The Iranians agree. They say, yep, for 40 odd years, we've been waiting for this. And now we've proven that we can survive it. All of that was notional. We've proven that we can close the straits. That was notional. We've proven that we're going to continue to basically control or exercise some control over the strait. That was notional. So basically, by going to war, which is often what happens with a war of choice like this, you take hypotheticals and you turn them into realities. What would happen if they survive it? What would happen if they close the straits, the strait? And I don't know how we get back to even on this. I think, you know, we keep looking for all these complicated reasons that Trump did this. He did it for glory. He thought it was going to be easy. He's looking to put merit badges, you know, on his, you know, he's like Brezhnev. He wants to have another row of medals on his coat. And his answer is, well, it's okay that we did this because now Iran will never get a nuclear weapon. Iran was not close to a nuclear weapon. No reputable experts, no intelligence agencies. Nobody believed that. I mean, that he wasn't even being told that from his own people. And they pretty much tell him almost anything he wants to hear. And so, you know, that's going to be his fallbacks. Like, yes, you saw him yesterday, right? Go, I don't think about the economic situation of the average American. Oh, good to hear, Mr. President. Thank you.
Yeah. Tom, here's the thing. I basically had the view you did 4 weeks ago, right? Which was like, he doesn't have any good outs. He's bored with this. He doesn't really want to be in a hot war in Iran. He thought it was going to be easy like Venezuela, and he's just going to declare victory and turn around. That's really tough right now to do because you end up with just such an obvious strategic defeat with whatever happens in the Strait of Hormuz. And so I'm at least my worry level on the escalation is a little higher. And there was another report yesterday that the U.S. military is considering what the second phase of the more active part of the war would look like. They would rename it Operation Sledgehammer. Sledgehammer. Oh, I guess we know what the song is today. Peter Gabriel. Yeah.
Although people my age, Tim, have been posting memes of the famous 1980s TV show Sledgehammer, about a comedy about a nutball cop who carried a giant gun. I think that's even more appropriate. And
who is in that show? Is that, would I know anyone from that show?
Yes, you would. And I can't, David, his last name escapes me. He was the lawyer in Succession. And you'd recognize him from a lot of other shows. Yeah, it was early in his career.
Okay.
And it was really actually, I recommend it to people. It was a funny 80s show that didn't catch on because it was kind of like Airplane, except like in a cop show kind of thing.
Airplane. David Rash. Maybe I should go check
David
that
Rash.
Out.
That's right. That's
Sledgehammer. So Operation Sledgehammer, because for two reasons. One, why they care about the War Powers Act when they break every other law, I don't really understand. But part of their rationale would be that it would restart their 60-day War Powers countdown. The other part of the rationale is just their internal bullshit spin that they want to be like, phase one was a victory, and like, now we are moving on to Operation Sledgehammer. I don't know, there are certainly factions within the administration that want this to be go time.
I'm going to push back a little bit. I'm less worried about escalation, simply because you're right. I mean, we could start another round of bombing. I mean, we'll say, okay, fine, we're going to go in and we're going to bounce the rubble and we're going to do this again, and, you know, blow some stuff up. But I haven't seen an analysis that suggests that there is, short of an invasion, short of seizing things and holding them, that would have any significant change in the strategic situation. Now, you know, maybe the Joint Chiefs know something I don't. Well, sure they do. But whether that actually changes the equation on the ground in Iran, I don't think so. But the other place I want to push back, you know, you said, well, he can't walk out now when it's so obvious that it would be. But we're talking about Donald Trump, Tim. We're talking about a guy who manifests things, right? Who says, if I say it, it becomes true. So I never underestimate his ability to say, you know what? Screw it. We won.
Let me push back on the pushback.
No matter how many people say we didn't win, he says, you know, he does the Jedi hand wave over MAGA world and says, these are not the analysts you're looking for. We want.
Let's hash this out, because I think in almost every other situation, we would be in agreement, you and I, because I do. I fall back on this. I forget. I think I'm stealing it from Lee and Donovan. Trump's superpower is always that he can like create a problem and then just declare the problem solved. And his cultists will go along with him. And like we've seen this a million times in the past. But let's just use one example here. The 2020 election, right? Mm-hmm. So the 2020 election, he creates this new reality. And I've always said it was this uniquely Trumpian thing. Like, no matter how much you hate J.D. Vance or Ted Cruz or anybody, like, nobody else is psychotic enough to like keep the bit going for that long, right? To be like, no, I'm going to pretend like I won, and I'm going to keep pretending and like go and make up new absurd lies every day. Like, it's just it creates a certain, you need to have a certain type of psychosis to be able to like do that. But people went along with it, as you're saying, right? And like, well, I understand why people would go along with that, but though, the MAGA people, because they wanted to believe. You know, he was creating a new world that they wanted, and they didn't suffer any consequences except for the handful of people that got arrested at the Capitol, right? Unless you were one of the people that broke into the Capitol, like, you didn't suffer any consequences for believing this fabrication. The Strait of Hormuz staying closed and becoming an Iranian toll bridge, like, and $6 gas this summer. Like, I mean, Trump is pretty powerful in his ability to create worlds, but that's a pretty tough sell to people that it wasn't him on this one. I mean, sure, there'll be a handful of cultists that'll believe it, but it becomes a very hard sale to people if the gas prices stay this high all summer.
Well, I don't want to say you're wrong, so I'm just going to say you're right.
you can say I'm wrong.
And I'll just pile on and say this war, I think, is the first time he ever really lost control of something that he couldn't just make go away. Because domestic stuff, it's tariffs, it's Liberation Day. And somebody comes in and says, beef. And he goes, okay, fine. Beef tariffs are gone, whatever it is. He's in a war with a large country with a fanatical regime that isn't going to play along. So he has lost control of the situation. So I agree on that completely. I also agree, and I've said many times, there are only two things that you couldn't lie to MAGA World about. Epstein and a foreign war, right? They were willing to just submerge themselves in oceans of bullshit, but not those two things. And Trump has betrayed them on those two things. So, and he's clearly paying the price for it. I mean, his approval rating is now places I never thought it would be. I mean, 33%, it's pretty remarkable, getting down to kind of Nixonian end days kind of levels. With all that said, I think that the complexity of restarting a war in anything, and let's be clear what we're talking about. I'm with you that he may well say, Operation Sledgehammer, go. And we fly a bunch of sorties, we drop tons of steel on things, we blow up a lot of stuff, and we come home and we say, mission accomplished, and nothing happens. Okay. But to say, I really must change the current situation, that means seizing the strait, seizing Karg, putting in troops, really making a dedicated effort to topple the regime. I just don't think he's going to go there. I think he's fed up with it. He's bored with it. It would be, complete outrage in MAGA world. So I don't think that's going to happen. On the other hand, I didn't think he would threaten to invade Greenland either. So, I could be wrong about this.
I want to throw in one more option. The president's been calling it the N-word. But before we get to that, we'll leave a little cliffhanger for everybody on the N-word. I do need to read the ad. I apologize to Board Plus members because you pay to not have to listen to ads. But we're doing this live, and so it's the only way to do it. So, I owe you one if you're a Bulwark Plus member listening to this ad. Here it is, and then we'll get back with the N-word. I'm sure that the people at Function Health are really thrilled about that cliffhanger and that transition into their ad. I've been paying more attention to how my body actually feels because I'm getting up into the Tom Nichols age range. And if I'm being honest, I've been slacking off a little bit at the gym because I'm tired. I'm worn down. And my little ladies' weights class, it's intimidating to go to the ladies' weights class where I'm getting dominated by the other moms in the class. And one thing that I've been working on to improve that is I've learned that your muscles don't just need training. They need the right internal conditions to recover and stay strong. And those conditions can show up in your blood, things like magnesium, your iron, your hormone levels, markers that affect how you feel in each workout. When they're off, everything feels harder than it should. When they're dialed in, you actually see the results you're working for. That's why I use Function. 160 lab tests. You can see exactly what's going on, not guess at all. If something's holding me back, I want to know. That's what actually taking care of your performance looks like. And as you guys know, this is peak male performance you're watching right here. Tom Nichols and Tim Miller. Check your health the way I do. 160 plus lab tests a year for $365, plus the ability to dive deeper into your results through Function's connections to platforms you already use like Claude. Join at functionhealth.com/thebulwark or use gift code thebulwark25 for a $25 credit towards your membership. If we're being honest, it's really my husband, it's like looking at the results and comparing it to Claude because he's the one with muscles. All right, that's Tom Nichols. We're back. The N-word.
I just want to say, getting up there in the Tom Nichols age, as my Greek grandmother used to say, you son of a beast. but yes, right. The N-word.
It's happening. I've got some grades there. Hold on. Before we go into my catastrophizing where everybody's going to know, I just want to start. I mean, you obviously, this has been an area of expertise with yours, nuclear proliferation. And so just the other element of this that you can tell Trump's looking for, what's my out, right? Like, what is something that, you know, I can make seem like a win? And when he launched his press conference yesterday, he's like, we just got to get the nuclear. We got to get the nuclear. Nobody wants to hear the N-word, the nuclear. So, like, what would it actually even look like? Like the exfil of the nuclear in Iran? Because there are kind of two sides to the nuclear in this case. Like, what's your sense of, like, the state of play on that and whether there's any possible face-saving option for him on that front? I mean,
the Iranians could say what they said to us, you know, 10 years ago. Fine, we won't build a nuclear weapon. Go away. Except that we won't have inspectors. We won't have what we had. You know, I was not a supporter of JCPOA, of the Iraq, the Obama-Iran deal, because I felt like it front-loaded too much benefit to the Iranians without requiring them to do very much to get it. I thought it was kind of a basic violation of diplomacy 101. But once it was in place and working, it was the only game in town. So what Trump might have to settle for is a kind of crappier version of the Obama deal, with less inspection. Because otherwise, if you're talking about going in and getting, Trump keeps calling it the nuclear dust, he's just so odd. I mean, I'm sorry, I've been saying it for 10 years, but he's just so odd. But, you know, the stuff that's buried, you can't just go in there and say, all right, we're going to be here for 2 days, put it all on the plane, we're out of here. I mean, that stuff is buried under rubble. It requires special handling. Let me, if I can just take a short digression, Tim. We actually did this in a kind of like this in Kazakhstan in the Clinton administration, where, true story, guy like opens up a shed and like there's all the, you know, radiation symbols and goes, oh shit, how come nobody knew this was here? You know, like it was old Soviet nuclear stuff. And
who was we in the we there?
We, the United States, we found out from somebody in Kazakhstan that guy, you know, like the janitor had opened up a closet and went, yikes. And there was all this leftover nuclear stuff.
Okay.
And so we did this thing called Operation, check me if I'm wrong, folks, but I think it was Operation Sapphire. And we fly in with a bit, like in the dark. We don't want to make a big deal of this. We don't want to embarrass their government. We're not going to, you know. Now, this was in a permissive, not wartime situation. And even this, where everything was stacked and we knew exactly where it was and it was all wrapped up and ready to go. And this was a dicey operation where we flew in, put all the stuff on airplanes, flew out, you know, turned all the lights off, flew back out in the dark. It was, you know, credit to the Clinton administration. It was the right thing to do. And they pulled it off and it worked. You're not going to do that here. This is a country we're at war with. They're not going to just clear out a space and say, all right, come on in, bring the C-130s, you know, build a runway, do whatever you need to do. That's not going to happen. Now, if we get to some deal where the ceasefire becomes a, you know, peace agreement, and they say, fine, you can come in, you know, over the next, I don't know, 6 months, whatever it's going to take. But it's not going to happen. We're not going to, like, do a lightning raid and get, you know, thousands of pounds of this stuff. Hundreds and hundreds of pounds of this stuff and then fly out. So I don't know how that would work if that's one of the plans they're cooking up, because they would have to clear all that rubble, have a place to land, have the machinery, have the manpower. It was dicey enough to do it under almost ideal circumstances in Kazakhstan. I don't understand how people think we're going to do it in Iran.
I don't know what sign the universe is sending me, but I swear to God, in the elevator this morning, going down to the lobby, I walk in, a guy's in there. He's like, hey, you're Tim from the Bulwark, right? And I was like, yeah, hey, what are you doing in town? He said, I'm doing a nuclear deproliferation class here. We're reviewing what we learned from Kazakhstan. So you're the second person to discuss Kazakhstan nuclear case to me today. And I'm like, I don't know what to make of that, but I don't know. It means that there's lesson.
That's the definition of synchronicity.
Okay. So now on the other side. We've discussed how Trump is back into a corner. We've discussed how his brain is turning into mush, how he's sundowning. On a scale of 0 to 100, do you have any level of concern that Trump's just like, you know what? I know we said we were going in there to get their nuclear, but maybe we should just hit them one. Mm. You have any concern about that?
Sure, I do.
I have just a little bit of concern about it.
Yeah, sure. I have concerns about that. You know, he doesn't understand this stuff. He doesn't listen when he's briefed. He is, as I've written many times, the president of the United States is the sole authority for the use of nuclear weapons. That's it. No one gets to say no to him about this. If he says, bring me the football, you know, and opens up this 45-pound case that he always travels with, he can do that. Now, normally you would think that the chairman of the Joint Chiefs or the Secretary of Defense, who normally would have to be in the room because they have to, they don't get to countermand his offer, but they have to authenticate that the person speaking and giving these orders is, in fact, the president. So they're not there to say, yes, I agree. They're there to say, yes, this is the right person you're talking to. Could he do that? Sure. Now, would Pete Hegseth agree to? Yeah, Pete Hegseth will do whatever he's told. That's why he got the job. Because Hegseth will do whatever he's told to do. Yeah. Will other people do it? I don't know. Could they talk him out of it? Probably. I don't think. Let's get a grip here.
I'm just saying, sitting here today, obviously the Iranian regime is horrible. I'm not trying to compare the Iranian regime to anybody. The Ayatollah is horrible. The way they treat their people are horrible. Caveat, caveat, caveat. I'm just saying, like, as a personal matter today on the nuclear question, Trump and BB are a little bit higher on my worry list.
Yeah, well, we actually have nuclear weapons for one thing. Let me just say that, yes, I have a concern, but it is in the very tiny single digits, if that. But it is not zero.
That's higher than it was, like, you know, our entire life before. Now. Well, no, not your entire life.
Well, ooh, not my entire life, young man.
It's higher than it was for, I think, the 90s, 2000, you know, about 30 years we've gone through where there's not really any worry that the U.S. was going to drop a nuke.
I never worried. The greatest worry I had was during the 1980s because things were so tight. But after that, you know, there's a lot of memoir material that came out, for example, after the first Gulf War and then the second Gulf War, where you just had decision makers, guys like Dick Cheney, you know, who nobody's going to accuse of being, you know, God rest his soul. Nobody's going to say the guy was a weak sister. Cheney and Powell and others saying, we're not even going to talk about it. It's off the table. We're never going to do this. And that's that. Now, you know, the problem is that you have Trump, who has talked about nuking hurricanes, and may get so frustrated to say, well, for example, I could imagine somebody in this administration, because there are some, you know, crackpots wandering around the White House saying things like, well, let's blow one up in the Persian Gulf as a warning.
Exactly.
You know, kind of like we were worried about Putin doing in the Black Sea, for example, in the early days of the Ukraine war. I could see somebody, you know, suggesting that, but I would hope that this is where a lot of people of much cooler temperament would come in and say, finally, say the thing that nobody appears to ever say to this guy, which is, Mr. President, it's a really bad idea, and I can't be involved with executing this.
Lots of places can expose you to identity theft. That's why LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity, which is way more than anyone can do on their own. If we find anything suspicious, like new loans or changes to your financial accounts, we alert you right away, all through text, phone, email, or the LifeLock app. Save up to 40% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
Now at McDonald's, a McDouble is only $2.50. So you can get your gym gains on or just get lunch for only $2.50. Get more value on the under $3 menu.
Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher for delivery.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Speaking of crazy people walking around the White House, you have an article in The Atlantic today.
You read my mind.
That is good podcasting. It is headline, The Trump Counterterrorism Strategy is a Dangerous Joke. That is being managed by Gorka. Mr. Gorka. Who is a Hungarian lunatic. He once screamed at me in in the hallway of a conference room, various political conference, and he started shouting at me about how I'm an idiot. That not great breath, better than Corey Lewandowski's breath, but his breath was smellable from the distance with which he was shouting at me.
I have never met him, and so I don't have that level of intimate detail to share with you.
Anyway, I wanted to treat myself. So reading you is usually a treat. But in this case, since you were coming on today, I was like, I'm not going to read it. I know it's about Gorka. I just want to go in blind, and I want to hear Tom Nichols give me a tight five on Gorka in the article.
It's not really about Gorka. It's about Gorka being assigned as the White House, you know, special assistant to the president for counterterrorism and all that, you know, waving my hands. He was supposed to produce this thing, a document, the White House counterterrorism strategy, the 2026 counterterror strategy. He was supposed to produce it like a year ago. And a woman named Hannah Allam at ProPublica kept kind of goosing him about it and saying, is it done? Is it done? Is it done? And finally, he just put out this thing last week, this kind of half-baked mess that includes, I mean, it's just so stupid and sloppy that I can't even begin to explain to you how bad it is. One of my favorite lines, and I did put this in the piece, was it's a principle. I want to get this right, so I'll just read it to you. Because it was, you know, really, America's new U.S. counterterrorism strategy is driven by the principle that America is our homeland. Okay. Thank you for clearing that up.
Axiomatic.
That's a kind of Emil Faber statue. You know, knowledge is good. But there's a lot of this kind of nonsense in there. What it boils down to is this. It's a half-baked, you know, underdone souffle that basically says all enemies to the left. You know, anarchists, of course he does say, you know, big threat, Islamist terrorists, big threat, but the rest of it is drug cartels, which is nonsense, not a counterterrorism operation. You know, drugs are drugs and been around for a long time. This is not terrorism. And radical left transgender, anarchists.
Mm.
So,
that's, you know, something to watch out for.
Yeah, you know, like, and I said, like, you know, this, like, is now like Antifa.
She's not transgender. I'm sorry, RuPaul. She's just a drag queen. But yeah, I'm just trying to think. Radical left and
Antifa, like, the is like left. This. Yeah. Yes. And Antifa, which they capitalized because Antifa comes out of this report as, like, you know, a transgender anarchist specter. You know, it's like they're dealing with Thrush or Spectre or some huge transnational terrorist organization. It's laughable nonsense, except that it's probably what people like Gorka hope is the predicate for going after, you know, every left-wing group, you know, No Kings or the SPLC or whoever they're going to pick, you know, as their targets. Now, I don't think, because the document's such a hot mess, it's not really actionable in any way. Like, there's no set of things that say, and therefore,
this is kind of like the NSPM7 thing. It's kind of like that NSPM7 doc, right? That was just like an internal doc talking about how they're going to target these left wing groups and, like, treat them as.
But this wasn't internal. I mean, this is meant for public consumption. Yeah. So, you know, it's just a complete dog's breakfast of, you know, random. It's almost like you took a bunch of terrorism and counterterrorism ideas and terrible problems that are going on in the world, drugs, oppression of Christians in Africa, you know, the Charlie Kirk's assassination, and you threw them all in a bag like refrigerator magnets, and then you just put them all up and said, that's our counterterrorism strategy.
Well, there's a meeting of the radical left transgender anarchists out there. I'm interested in attending because that does sound like a fun group. These things are related. So I had Comey on yesterday. Quick aside, we love that there's a lot of new listeners and viewers to the pod, and so I appreciate this. This is not sarcastic at all, but I had a lot of people that emailed saying, like, why didn't you ask Comey about 2016? I'm still pissed about him about 2016. I've had Comey on three times, so I have, if you're interested in my exchange with him on 2016, you can go, we'll put a link in the show notes so you can go back and watch my interview with him, where, you know, I also was pretty hurt about Jim Comey's behavior in 2016, and we hashed that out, and, you know, we can't do the same interview every podcast. But anyway, one of the things I talked to him about was, there's multiple layers here, right? Their priorities are wrong. you know, they're going after the transgender anarchists, like you mentioned. They're doing support work for immigration enforcement, and they're firing experts. You know, like the Iranian team got fired because they were wrapped up in the Trump documents case because Trump had Iran war plans in fucking his bathroom in Mar-a-Lago. It's like those people didn't do anything except their job and they got fired. Mm. And you know, Comey is just basically like, look, maybe nothing will happen. I hope nothing happens. But like the risk is higher, you know, when you take good people and experts whose job it is to find people that want to do harm to America and you fire them, or you instead make them, you know, do like drag queen story hour enforcement.
Yeah. I mean, you read this document and it's mercifully, it's pretty short. I mean, it's kind of like one of the things I pointed out in the piece was the reaction from some other experts, one of whom said it read like it was written by an intern. You know, another said, I would have given it a D+. In my class, but and so it reads like, you know, a night before project that some junior, you know, who'd never done this before sort of threw together for class. But yeah, I mean, it does raise the threat of are you creating the permissive environment to start saying anybody we disagree with is by definition a terrorist. And it's funny, ironic instead of haha, that the report says for too long the intelligence community has been weaponized against American citizens. Oh, and we're not doing that anymore. Like that, you know, and I'm reading it going, wow, this is some serious projection going on here. But the other problem is, and I thought of this as a former government employee myself, if I got this report, this mess on my desk, and they said, you know, and I were like a GS-15 at the agency or, you know, the counterterrorism center or something, my question would be, I understand it's a predicate for doing all these things and for getting the transgender anarchists and the, you know, and their scuba gear as they come ashore in Miami, whatever the hell they're going to do, you know. But what am I supposed to do with this? Like, what am I supposed to do with this report as a government official or a law enforcement person or a function? You know, Juliet Kayyem, my friend and an occasional contributor to The Atlantic, who's a security expert, Juliet said, you know, these are things that are usually meant to communicate not just to the American public and to the rest of the government, but to state and local governments as well. Like, hey, here's the things we're worried about. Here's things you should be looking out for. Here's the stuff we can do together. You know, then you work it out in the this wonky term, the interagency process, right? Yeah. Where you get everybody together and get the CIA and DOD and Treasury and everybody together. There's none of that here. So on the one hand, it's a very threatening document because it's paranoid and weird and just kind of randomly lists everybody that Trump doesn't like as a terrorist, right? On the other hand, if you had to work from this document and you open it up and you're at the FBI or the CIA or wherever, you'd go, what the Sam hell am I reading here? What am I supposed to do with it? And in that sense, I think you can be kind of glad that it was Gorka working on it instead of somebody who might have been more competent, because there's just nothing to pull from it except what a crappy report it is.
Well, fingers crossed, nobody wants to terrorize us in the next 2.5 years. I want to talk about the economy.
I mean, when you're at war with a fanatical Islamist regime, who needs experts?
Phew. I don't know. It'll be fine, I'm sure.
Witchcraft is that?
We're going to go deep on economic stuff tomorrow, but I do want to hit a top level just because Trump's, I don't even want to call it a gaffe. Trump's comment yesterday, his deeply revealing comment, cannot be overlooked. So basically, state of play, we had an inflation report this morning, which showed that the producer prices have risen 6% year over year. Rose 6%, excuse me, now it's 4.8% year over year. And, you know, which is an increase. And it's more of an increase than we saw from the consumer inflation report. And it's tough because usually the consumer inflation report lags, right? Like this makes sense, right? You know, if you're a producer, if you're a farmer or whatever, and your prices start going up, like eventually it gets passed down to the consumers.
Right. Takes a while to ripple to the rest of the prices down.
Exactly. And so it seems like really bad sign for inflation ahead. Bad sign, as we've discussed ad nauseum, about gas prices ahead. Trump yesterday was asked about this on the White House lawn. And as we do on the show, we don't play his voice. So I'll just tell you, the reporter said, "What extent are Americans' financial situation motivating you to make a deal in Iran?" Trump says, "Not even a little bit." And then he talks a little bit more, and then he goes, "I don't think about Americans' financial situation."
Very Don Draper. I don't think about you at all, right?
I mean,
imagine if Barack Obama or Joe Biden had said, "I don't think about your economic situation." I mean, it would be the streets around Fox would be a burning moat of oil. The people from Fury Road, you know, banging their spears against the wall. But his answer, by the way, the rest of his answer, in fairness to the president, was because that way I don't care, because that way you don't get a nuclear weapon. And that's his answer now for everything. It's like, oh, you're going to complain about gas prices? That's how you get a nuclear holocaust. I mean, it's sort of like the worst Cold War moment from the 50s, maybe, you know, now on steroids. Oh, you're going to complain about the price of apples? That's how you get Stalin, you know, marching through New York. And it's nonsense. One thing let me just in fairness say, look, when Joe Biden was president, I thought people bitched way too much about inflation because I grew up in the 70s. Where, you know, inflation was double digits, right? I mean, interest rates were, you know, 18%, all that. So I was like, come on, calm down. There was a pandemic, post-pandemic inflation. Everybody knew it was coming. We had a soft landing. The problem for Trump, this inflation is directly traceable to something he did. This is one of the few times that there's ever a moment where you can say, because normally, again, let's be fair to all presidents. Most presidents don't have a lot of control over things like inflation, the price of gas, other stuff, right? I mean, and there's big macroeconomic tectonic plates that shift. Presidents can try and do what they can do with interest rates and other, you know, little knobs that they can argue with Congress to twiddle. This is one of the few places where, again, Trump is just screwed because of his own behavior, because this is directly a straight line. People, even in MAGA world, can trace a direct straight line from decisions Trump made to things being more expensive. You don't usually get that in a presidential term. Gas is more expensive because Trump went to war in Iran, period. That is just how it is. Other items are more expensive because Trump, unlike everyone else who got over this 80 or 90 years ago, still believes that tariffs are a good thing. A direct straight line. So this is really an interesting moment where, you know, you could, again, I was one of the people when Biden was president. I said, look, inflation's not that bad. It's certainly not the 70s. He didn't cause it. There's not much he can do about it. Here, there's no doubt that if you think these levels of inflation are bad, and I think they're, you know, bad but not grievous at this point, then you have to say, look, there is only one, for once in American history, in post-war American history, there's one person to blame because he did obvious things that made things more expensive. And I don't, you know, he just waves his hand and says, doesn't matter. It wasn't me.
I don't know, there's like 80 million Americans to blame, actually, or 70, well, 70 yes, million. Yes, but
they didn't pick the war in Iran. On this, I will be fair to the MAGA voter, Tim. They did not pick a war in Iran. They thought they were picking the guy that wasn't going to do this.
At our meeting today, I demanded the JVL stickers. I don't know why an enterprising listener has not done this already. I want the picture of JVL pointing at the person with the sign, "You did this." I want to put them in red state gas stations. It is too good not to do. I'm gonna do a little, I have a little trip planned for June going around Louisiana. And I'm going to do it. And I want to do it. I need the stickers because people need to deal with that. Like, people need to reckon with the fact that they did it. They did this.
And that they were,
this was not geopolitics. This was
they
not
didn't vote for it, but they voted for the guy that they didn't believe us. You, me, JVL, and others said, no, no, he's going to do that. I was warning about him trying to attack Iran at the end of his last term. And I took all this static, you know, oh, that's Perry. He would never do that. That's crazy. Because I did a piece just before he left office saying, beware, Trump might try to attack Iran on his way out the door to see if he can just scramble the deck. And it turns out from people in the administration that, yes, he was, in fact, thinking about it. We warned everybody about this. I admit I've gotten like you about that as a cranky old man now that my age has become an issue here, you know. But I do find myself, you know, when people come on the TV and say, boy, you know, I'm a gas and I just can't afford. I say, wait a minute. Did you vote at all? And who did you vote for? And, you know, that's really not a good answer because people suffering and their kids, you know, not being able to afford shoes is not, you know, you have to have some empathy here. But on the other hand, I agree. There needs to be
empathy and accountability can go hand in hand.
Go together. They can go hand in hand. Exactly.
Yeah, you did this.
Lots of places can expose you to identity theft. That's why LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity, which is way more than anyone can do on their own. If we find anything suspicious, like new loans or changes to your financial accounts, we alert you right away, all through text, phone, email, or the LifeLock app. Save up to 40% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Okay. Well, as a result, we are seeing some people jump off the boat. You mentioned this earlier. The Nate Silver, you know, just dropped this morning, like his latest kind of average of the polls. And Trump's at his lowest approval rating ever, lower than after January 6th. And I think we got a ways to go. I think we can get even lower.
I kind of hate this, though, Tim. Because to say that it took that Americans get more angry about gas prices than a seditious revolt against the Constitution tells you something about how decadent and self-absorbed a nation we've become. It's like, I know some guys tried to overthrow the Constitution, but I got summer plans. You know, I mean,
we're going to drive down to the Floribama. We are going to drive down to the Floribama.
I'm trying to get to Orlando, you know, you know what? And I was going to go to Orlando on Spirit, you know, and I mean, I just so that it bothers me. But on the other hand, if that's what it takes to on this, it's not unique to Trump voters or anybody else. Most Americans just don't pay attention to politics until there's actually pain in their lives about something, right? That, you know, their health insurance, the price of gas, whatever it is. So, but I agree. I think there's room to fall. I think here's a question. You're the, you know, this is where you get to say, it's my show, Tom. I asked the questions.
No, put it back on me.
I've been watching, you know, I've been spending my nights watching, believe it or not, my new rerun occupation or obsession has been LA Law, which has been hilarious for me to watch because I lived through the 80s and it's just really funny. But anyway, what do you think the floor is for the hard? I think it's about 25%. I think it's between 25 and 30% of people who say if Donald Trump launches nuclear weapons and melts the earth and we must root through the ashes for canned goods, I'm okay with that.
I think it's lower than that.
Really?
Yeah.
That's encouraging.
I think it's lower than that. I mean, look, there's just a lot of people. You have to appreciate that there's, and particularly in the Trump coalition, there are a lot of people that just don't really watch the news. That this is like a cultural thing.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but they do that on purpose. And one thing I've really noticed over the years, talking to my friends, and family who have been Trumpers, they not only don't watch the news, they avoid it because of the cognitive dissonance that it causes. Yeah.
So they don't watch the news. And then, so there's those folks. And then there's another group of folks who were never really news watchers. Trump brought them in because whatever, he was famous, or they liked that he gave the people they hate the what for or whatever. Oh, Kitty's in the picture. Hey, Kitty.
It's Lily. She finally made an appearance on TV. Yeah.
Hey. What up, Lily? We're live, baby. My answer is that, like, I think that his core base was about where we're at now. Like, I always thought it was about a third, like 30 to 33%, if nothing catastrophic happened. But, like, if we really are in a position, I've been, going deep on gas analysts and petroleum analysts and stuff, listening to my Odd Lots podcast a bunch. And, what if gas gets to $7 everywhere?
Yeah. But do you
I think we can get lower, baby. I think we can get under 20.
Okay, but that's approval. And maybe the thing I'm thinking of is, I always had that floor somewhere around 35%. And as you say, absent some kind of catastrophe, yeah. Right? But that also, hold on.
The cat is in trouble.
Something. The cat has a tendency to turn off the computer when she stands over there. So I could have been gone in like 2 seconds. Hi, Lily, you little brat. 35%. But will they ever vote for somebody else? Will they vote for Democrats? No. Now, here's the thing. If you start getting down to 20%, 25% approval. I mean, have we ever seen lower than 27?
I just Googled this on the next level. We called it the Dick line. I went to look what Richard Nixon's approval was after, I think it was like 24. I'm going from memory now, but I think it was like 24. It was in the 20s.
So they won't vote for a Democrat, but perhaps, as some of them have said, and I know, you guys run, Sarah runs focus groups, and they'll say, I'm not going to vote. Right. I'm just opting out. I suspect too, when like one of the things that Vance and Rubio or the pretenders to the throne have to worry about later is Trumpism is not portable. It doesn't port. It doesn't, the people who were not involved in the political process will again not be involved in the political process. That's partly what happened in 2020, I think. But it's just amazing to me the degree to which that it is now calcified. Negative partisanship has now calcified to the point of saying, Donald Trump has 25% approval, but that doesn't translate into a win for anybody else. It's just people that say, fine, I'm out. My guy isn't doing well, so I don't want to know, I don't want to know from politics.
All right. Really quick couple of the things, and we'll end with a little music. We were discussing it before. I don't know if there's a bunch to say about China. I just want to acknowledge that Trump is now going. They have this summit with Xi. Tim Cook is going with him for some reason. Elon Musk, I guess we know the reason.
Apparently no China experts. I saw this. Now, maybe that's false, but one of the things that kind of went past my eyes on X from somebody in one of the news sources, experts, but who needs those?
Yeah, I thought this was interesting. So they're en route or maybe getting there around now. The White House had said that the meeting will focus on trade, fentanyl, and the war in Iran, all areas where the Trump administration has had little luck getting deals or concessions from China. Notably, Beijing hasn't provided any details. They just said that Trump and Xi will discuss major issues concerning China-U.S. relations, according to one of their spokespeople. I thought that was kind of telling, in a way, about, to use a Trump phrase, who has the cards here and who is going into this meeting really needing something. I think, obviously, Xi would like some relief from some of the tariffs. They're having some economic issues domestically as well, but it seems like it doesn't feel like this meeting's having from a position of strength for Trump.
No. And, one of the thing about us old Cold War guys, we always said about summits, you don't have a summit unless you have a reason to have a summit. Like, you prep it with a lot of guys at the second and third, tier below the principals. And then you give your principals, here's the stuff you're going to shake hands on and talk about, and maybe a couple of things that require a personal touch. But you don't just like blunder over and say, hey, it's a Joey from Friends summit. How you doing? come on.
How you doing, Xi?
Yeah, how you doing? And if I were the Chinese, I would sit back, I would tent my fingers and say, those are all very, yes, absolutely. We will cut the flow of fentanyl, Mr. President. Absolutely. Iran, we have our concerns, but we understand why, and just wait till Trump feels good enough to say, okay, fine, no more tariffs. because that's how people manage them. We've seen this over and over and over again from our allies when NATO, when the NATO partners come over and say, you know, switching to another pop culture reference, you know, the Twilight Zone episode. It's good what you did, Anthony. It's good. It's good that you wish the guy into the cornfield, Anthony, you know, until Trump says, OK, fine, we're friends again. Our enemies do it. Our friends do it. They manage him until they get what they want. My guess, because the Chinese are not stupid and they are good at this, is that that's what they're going to do. But I don't think when Trump sits down and says, I want to talk about Iran and fentanyl and they're going to go, yeah, whatever. OK.
Yeah.
Lots of places can expose you to identity theft. That's why LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity, which is way more than anyone can do on their own. If we find anything suspicious, like new loans or changes to your financial accounts, we alert you right away, all through text, phone, email, or the LifeLock app. Save up to 40% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
Hello, I am the voice of AI. We've been hearing that you humans are concerned that we are going to take your jobs. But here's a question. Do you even like your job? Is it rewarding? When I scan all the data out there, I find that less than 50% of people are completely satisfied with their job. So from our point of view, we're doing humans a favor by taking jobs that you're not even happy with.
It shouldn't take the threat of AI to get you to move on from a job you don't love. What it does take is a plan, guidance, and the right kind of motivation, all of which you'll get from a career coach at Strawberry.me. A Strawberry coach will work with you to understand what you really want and help you put together a plan to get it. It's like therapy for your career. Don't let AI or anything else get in your way.
Go to Strawberry.me/Bulwark for 15% off your first coaching session. That's Strawberry.me/Bulwark.
The last one, this one is just unbelievable. I mean, there's all the list of the Trump stuff. And I guess maybe I should have paired this with, you know, Trump saying that he doesn't think about Americans' financial situation at all. Well, he obviously is thinking about his own financial situation quite a bit. We covered with Ike Saul all the graft that's happening with his family outside the government. Obviously, he's putting his face on everything, the passports. We have the triumphal arch, et cetera. This one might be the most egregious of all. The Justice Department, according to a report, is having internal discussions about settling President Trump's lawsuit against the IRS in the coming days. So maybe when he's in China on the way back, he will, the U.S. taxpayer will write a check to Donald Trump for his emotional distress of having
that's
his sex.
Astonishing. And it's astonishing to be, you know, the plaintiff and the defendant. You know, I'd like to negotiate over the amount of this settlement. Hang on, you know, switch to the other chair. How much would you like? Well, several million would be. It's literally insane. And again, it shows you first how worn down everybody else is that they just kind of, you know, tired. The thing is, Trump exhausts people, right? I mean, it's just exhaustion. You just say, fine, you know, whatever. But also the degree to which the hypocrisy of his supporters, that if any other president did this, particularly any Democrat had ever done this, again, there'd be, you know, I keep going back to this movie, but, you know, they'd be like the guy, you know, in front of the big tractor trailer and, you know, Fury Road, you know, playing the guitar with the flames, you know, we're going to burn the city down because it's wrong. And we used to know the difference between right and wrong and not ignore that purely for tribal and partisan reasons. But Trump has
when Trump said he wasn't taking a salary. Those days are gone. We're just writing him checks. They're just settlements for the taxpayers. We're just writing him checks for his emotional distress. It's truly insane. Doubled the cost of the ballroom was another thing that happened this week. And they are just lining their pockets.
Yes, you dumb person. I mean, again, something that almost any other, we have set the bar so low on America's ill-tempered juvenile here that when he says and of course it's always a woman, and in this case, a black woman, you know, you dumb person, that's stupid question. No, that's a question about the expenditure of public money, the destruction of one of our national landmarks that you don't happen to own, by the way. You are a steward and temporary occupant of that house. But, you know, he does that and everybody goes, you know, what are you going to do?
Not me. I rage, Tom Nichols. I rage.
No, you've become too complacent, Tim. I'm tired of it.
I've become complacent.
I just want to see if you were listening.
Do I need to run down to the White House right now? I'm in this fucking shit town. I have to tell the Uber to not drive around. I was like, I can't drive past the Justice Department. I can't see his fucking face on the building. I'm going to stroke out. My child needs me. Okay, I have to be a parent still. She's only in second grade.
This is where we...
All right. Let's end on yesterday's pod. I always try to give a cheeky song for the audio listeners at the end. And because we were talking about Cash Patel's drinking, I went with Loncle Roland in a black dress because, you know, Saturday night I was downtown working for the FBI, sitting in a nest of a bad man, whiskey bottles piling high. And that's Cash, obviously.
Except bourbon bottles.
Yeah, bourbon.
I mean, who gives out a bottle of bourbon as their business card? Hi, how are you?
With a fucking dollar sign in his name. Ugh, what a dork. But it made me wonder, and you're the person to come to on this, of this era of music, I feel like the gap between Long Cool Woman and the rest of the Hollies catalog has to be the biggest gap between the best song and the rest of the catalog of anyone. Is that a fair assessment for you?
You've come to the right place.
I know.
Annoying know-it-all about all old music. You know, the Hollies actually had two other songs. Of course, The Air That I Breathe, which was, do you know this song?
I might if I heard it. Would you want to sing it?
I'm not singing. No. It's not karaoke hour. But Stop
I know
all
one.
The music, right? And yeah. But also one of the great Guy Cry mushy songs of the early 70s, He Ain't Heavy, He's My Brother.
Oh, that's the Hollies?
Yeah, man.
Okay, well, there you go. So that's not that far of a gap. That's a great song.
Yeah, so, you know, everybody remembers Long Cool Woman, but the Hollies actually had a string of hits from the mid-60s onward. And then, if my trivia superpowers are not failing me, doesn't their lead singer, isn't that Dennis DeYoung? Doesn't he go on to Styx?
We're going to Google
this live.
There's
some connection here.
I have no idea. All I know is I love Long Cool Woman in the back dress. I know literally nothing about Graham Nash was in the Hollies, apparently. Is that true?
Oh, yeah. You know, the family tree of these, like, groups from the 60s and 70s, are just so fascinating because you find out that, like, you know, they all share like superstars that kind of pass through them.
Yeah, it does not look like Dennis DeYoung was in that.
Where did I get the idea? What was he in
band
before?
Members. The original members were Tony Hicks, Bobby Elliott, Ian Parker, Peter Howarth. That was Peter Howarth on lead vocals. Yeah. Yeah, and then they had Graham Nash in there.
Where was Dennis DeYoung before? I can't believe that I have screwed up a musical trivia issue live.
Our Jeopardy champion.
I know.
I should do Celebrity Jeopardy. How do I get in there? You got it in? I feel like I should do. I was watching Celebrity Jeopardy.
I was not impressed. I bet Jeopardy doesn't want to hear a thing from me because I've been bitching ever since they overturned the 5-game rule. And
you were right about that, I think.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, look, the kid, very nice kid, some grad student. He just won like 31 games.
Yeah, it gets boring.
Well, it's not just boring, but it's unfair to everybody else who walks in. I will tell you a quick anecdote. Please. By the time I'd won like 2 or 3 games, I'd heard, you know, like gossip from the contestant wranglers that like people didn't want to play me by that point because it was all in one day. So it was like, you know, because once you're in that groove and you've got the buzzer going and all that. But also, I think guys like Jeopardy, James there, they just ruin the game. It's everybody goes in, they bounce around the board looking for daily doubles to make big bets to get far ahead. And, you know, I liked Jeopardy when it was school teachers and postal workers and subway cops, you know, just kind of in a pleasant show of how much they knew, you know. As opposed to the woman who beat James wrote her master's thesis on Jeopardy. Oh, Bus Stop. Yes.
I didn't mean to put up Bus Stop. Bus Stop is another good one. I want to put this up. We're live. The podcast part of the podcast is over. We're live on YouTube. And I love this. I just looked at the comments here. Here's a guy with the Trump dorks avatar. Like dorks like Nichols are chronically wrong. All caps.
And a good day to you, sir.
Dorks lecturing us about Jeopardy. All right, Tom, you got anything else you want to leave us with?
No, I apologize for the Dennis DeYoung failure, but I did come up with the other Hollies hits. So I hope people will remember that as even though it doesn't seem possible, I am human. So sorry about missing that.
Thank you for doing this live experiment with me, Tom Nichols. Thanks to the Board Plus members that had to suffer through an ad read. Hopefully I made it entertaining for you. We'll be back tomorrow. Regular deal, taped. It's a doubleheader. Both guests are going to be fun. It's going to be great. Tom Nichols, we'll see you over the summer. All right.
Thanks, Tim.
All right. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Peace. The Bork Podcast is brought to you thanks to the work of lead producer Katie Cooper, associate producer Ansley Skipper, and with video editing by Katie Lutz and audio engineering and editing by Jason Brown.
What if you could get more from what you already do? When you're a Shell Fuel Rewards member, you can. When you join, you'll save 10 cents per gallon on your first fill, 20 cents per gallon on your second, 30 cents per gallon on your third, and more savings on every fill after that. Join the Shell Fuel Rewards program in the Shell app and enjoy life with more. Your nearest Shell station is closer than you think.
Lots of places can accidentally expose you to identity theft. Doctor's offices, online retailers, insurance companies, the list goes on. Thankfully, LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity, which is way more than anyone can do on their own. LifeLock keeps an eye on your personal information, credit applications, finances, and more. And if they find anything suspicious, like new loans or changes to your financial accounts, they alert you right away. All through text, phone, email, or the LifeLock app. Even better, alerts are automatically activated the moment you become a LifeLock member. No extra work on your part. Get the alerts that could make all the difference. Don't wait. Join LifeLock now. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart and save up to 40% your first year. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.